The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey, welcome back to Breaking Banks. We are live from New York, which in itself is quite an achievement because I had to catch the red eye from San Jose via Los Angeles. I almost didn't make it. My connection was really tight. I was figuring, how am I going to do the show if I don't get back to New York? But I am here. We're live in New York. And Ian Carr is back with us to give us some of the news. Ian, welcome back.
Hey, Brett, how are you?
So what's happening this week in fintech?
Well, this week was pretty busy. Everyone was at Finovate, judging from Twitter, except for me.
Who was at Finovate?
Brett, you were there, and there were a lot of companies there, and it seemed like a great event. I think MoveIn won Best in Show, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, we did pretty well.
Yeah, and not only that, you guys announced a global partnership with Accenture, correct?
We did.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty interesting. And from what I understand, you're going to be offering digital, helping banks around the world improve their digital banking tools.
Basically, right. Rolling out MoveIn, you know,
yeah,
around the
that's
world.
Pretty interesting.
They're going to help us spool up, you know, and have teams on the ground to sort of help us do some gluing and integration work.
Yeah. So while everyone was in California, everyone in the fintech startup world was in California, there was a lot of other news as well. For instance, this is something that I've been curious about for a little while. How much did Samsung pay for LoopPay, the mobile payment platform that they acquired a couple months ago? Turns out, according to
They didn't say.
And according to Recode, they paid $250 million. Yeah. And I asked around after the acquisition, and the number I got was north of $100 million. So I was thinking, oh, maybe $100, $110, $125. But $250 million is a big acquisition. It's on the same – I think it's on the same level as Paydiant and PayPal. I think Paydiant was acquired for $240 million, something like that. Or $280 million, sorry. And but yeah, it just shows how valuable these mobile platforms are becoming.
Cool. Any other news from offshore?
Well, as you might have seen, Walmart made a deal with interesting deal with Alipay, where Walmart customers in China can use the Alipay wallet to make purchases. So it just shows how a dominant Alibaba and Alipay, even though they're two separate companies now. It just shows how dominant the company is becoming in China, that these American retailers are really have to partner with Alipay and Alibaba to expand their presence in Asia.
You know, this is something I'd like you to have a look at before you come on the show next time, is actually size Alipay's business, because I've got a feeling that you know, they're probably catching UnionPay in terms of their size, which would make them the third largest payment network in the world.
So I've been actually doing a little research on the China tech banking industry, and Alipay is massive. And it's interesting that these tech companies are offering these banking services, and they're actually, you know, working really well. Their money market fund is huge. I don't know the exact statistics, but it's on
93 billion.
It's massive. So it's interesting to see how. If they're going to roll that out internationally, and how the expansion for these financial services from these tech companies in China are going to come about.
So why didn't Walmart launch currency in
Asia? Yeah. Well, I think they want to see how it goes in the U.S. first, and
I think we know the answer to that, though. But
yeah, I mean, I think they're launching a test pilot in one market.
Yeah.
Sometime this summer, but I don't know. Currency seems.
Yeah, it's struggling.
Hey, yeah.
Listen, that's fantastic, Ian. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I know we had you going to do an interview for us today, but we have a special guest coming on that's taking that slot. So I apologize, but we'll get you on for that interview next week. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Ian.
All right. Thanks.
All right. So up next, as you guys probably aware, we've integrated, or we're in the process of integrating Jumio right now into Moovin. But Jumio is also a new sponsor for Breaking Banks. So it's an opportunity for me to introduce Mark Barish. Did I get it close,
well,
Mark?
Well, close. It's Barish.
Barish.
The opposite of the stock market today, which is quite bullish.
Barish. Oh, there you go. You see, you should have said that before. I would have remembered that. That would have been easier. And you're with Jumio, of course. So tell us about Jumio, Mark, for those that aren't familiar with Jumio.
Well, absolutely. And Brett, it's terrific to be here and to come on board as a new sponsor. Congratulations to you and the team on a dual victory, both at winning Best of Show at Finovate and this amazing Accenture deal that's in the news. And also on becoming a Jumio client. So thank you very much. Well, what we've been doing at Jumio is improving the whole way consumers interact with their identity when they go about opening a bank account or doing some other transaction that requires that they identify themselves, like getting a mobile boarding pass, for example. And what we did is we recognized that the device cameras that exist in mobile phones and on desktop computers are powerful enough for us to capture, to scan an image in real time of an ID, like a driver's license or a passport, that an individual holds up while in transaction, and then determine in real time whether it's a bona fide and an unmanipulated document, and then even compare the customer's actual face to the picture on the document, pull off all the information, like name and address and so forth, and then put it into a form that the customer is engaging with either on their mobile device or their desktop. So that whole set of activities, in simple words, means that consumers get stuff done faster and easier. And in the case of banks, that might mean opening up a new account instead of that painful typing again and again of their name and basic information, and instead of a bank having to figure out, well, how are we going to KYC this customer? Are we going to make sure they are who they say they are? How do we do that in a way that doesn't break the transaction and force them to fax us something or mail it? Instead, it's in transaction, and that means higher satisfaction, higher completion rates, and overall a better process for banks to control identity of their prospects and customers. So that's what we're all about at Jumio.
We have this common theme comes up in the show over and over again that fintech companies are attacking friction. And, you know, the interesting thing is whenever you talk about an application form or a piece of paper, that's the quintessential definition of friction in banking these days. So you've got to start with an approach to saying, how do you simplify that process, but, you know, you don't want to introduce risk or security issues. So tell me about, you know, in this process, if you're using Jumio to capture identity as part of a KYC process, and that's online or in a mobile app, what's your position in terms of the comparative security of Jumio or this, you know, digitized approach versus a physical face-to-face identity verification?
Well, in reality, what we're accustomed to doing face-to-face is generally not very good from a security perspective. And why is that? It's because the bank teller or the individual at a desk or at a hotel check-in, they're not trained in really identifying these documents. Many of them don't have the tools. So it's useful from the perspective of saying we did what we were supposed to do, but if the goal is to identify real documents as compared to fraudulent ones, it puts a great burden on an employee to do that. The caveat is if there are expensive and sort of antiquated hardware systems that the bank has invested in, literally a terminal where a bank individual employee might take an ID and stick it inside of a machine, those are pretty accurate, but a pain to use and expensive and certainly not prevalent in all instances. So while one would think that face-to-face is better, in fact, it's not as good. Now, nothing is perfect in this world, and I need to, you know, get that out. So doing things kind of algorithmically and utilizing device cameras, it can't be a perfect solution either.
But
however,
it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, nothing is. However, it's superior to the way we do it today because there's a great deal of algorithmic and sort of human ID expert steps that every ID goes through before it's authenticated.
Right, so we can't train every teller to be an identity expert, but you guys can build that into an algorithm.
Well, into an algorithm to one extent, and also, in addition, having a centralized real-time function of human oversight in certain instances. What we learned is that the types of, well, first of all, we processed three kinds of IDs from 100 different countries that were issued over many years. So literally there are 10,000 combinations. And they're on different media, plastic and paper and such. So what we learned, because of the complexity of IDs, is that there is no one single algorithmic approach that is going to be good enough for what our clients demand, for the level that they demand. So we think of it sort of as triage, where IDs go through some amount of automated checks and either pass or fail. And if we're concerned about what we see on using our automated tools, then we actually have an individual who's trained in that sort of set of IDs and has a whole tool chest that we've developed for them to utilize to do a deeper look to make sure that everything is right with that ID. So we found that combining human expertise along with algorithmic methodologies can produce ultimately the best result, which is what our clients demand from us.
And over time, presumably, the data set that we'll be able to refer to and sort of bring into play here could actually... You know, we've got a pretty limited data set when you've got an application form in a branch. You've got just that data and the human behind it, whereas bring additional data sources into play as well, right?
That's correct. Yes, so that's something that we can do as well, which is once we have identified the individual, then utilizing our partners like Equifax and others, we can reach out to them for additional corroborating information, which is
Using this across, particularly in the U.S., using it with different providers. Can you tell me some of the organizations that are using Jumio technology today?
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, in financial services, we've had a great deal of success, you know, in terms of acquiring all sorts of players in the space. The initial adopters were those who were in the prepaid credit card business and in loans and loan-making businesses because they have a real and direct need to service an online customer in a better way than they were doing it before. Of late, I'm delighted to say that we've been pulling in some of the top 20 banks in the world. One of them, which was announced earlier, is Lloyd's over in the UK, and we've got two major names in the US that I can't speak of at this moment, but they're the names that everybody knows, who after months and months of testing and evaluation are ready to move forward. So we hope to make an announcement about that soon. And in all three cases, the use case that they're thinking about is simply how do we onboard remote customers in a more convenient way, faster, and one that will yield us the least amount of fraud possible.
Because it's pretty simple, isn't it? If you've got to be getting revenue across mobile. I mean, that everyone's got to be thinking about that. And if you require a piece of paper with a signature, you can't execute it on mobile.
Well, there's all those regulations. You're exactly right. And then there's so many instances where we need to show our identity. So we're really big in the travel business, especially with airlines, and particularly around issuing international mobile boarding passes. So companies like United and EasyJet and others use us for that purpose. And it just totally changes the consumer experience because they don't have to ever stand in line to show their passport to an airline employee.
So, based on the fact that you have that, in the travel industry and then the online, the e-commerce sector, and then with financial services, is there some benefit in terms of that data collection that you're able to use across all of those industries then from a sort of a common identity platform perspective?
Well, that's a really terrific question. In that question, you have the answer to that question is, in fact, our roadmap that we are in the midst of executing today. currently, the data relationship exists between our client and their customer. So Moovin and your customer, whatever the data relationship that you have exists between you two and Jumio, works within that. And that means we either save or we don't save the data, or you store it, or we store it, or it's not stored at all. It's really up to what our client wants and, you know, how that works with their data agreements with their customer. But what we all see here is a really big opportunity for customers to effectively scan their identity once or once a year and then have that be approved and stored centrally and used across a network of merchants who are signed up to receive approved ID and, or authenticated ID information.
And maybe
and that really is where we need to go with this, and that is indeed our plan. Today, each scan is a discrete event. So if you were to come back to the same company a week later, you would, for a different business process, you would scan again and go through the authentication. And
that's great.
That's unnecessary, really, to do that time and time again.
All right, Mark. Well, listen, thank you for joining the show today. That's Mark Barish, is that right?
Perfect. All right.
Brad, you should have told me the stock market thing. I would have got it already.
Okay. Well, you're blessed with an easy last name to pronounce, so so don't laugh at me. But I appreciate you chatting with me today, and good luck with all the new...
Thanks for joining us. And when you guys have this next, you know, the next roadmap iteration, we'd love to hear about that.
Terrific.
Fantastic. That's Mark Barish from Jumio. If you want to check out Jumio, you can, of course, you can get to Jumio from the Breaking Banks homepage, breakingbanks.com. Just click on the logo or jumio.com. Okay, we've got a couple of minutes before the break, so I have a couple of guests visiting New York in the studio. We have all the way from down under in Australia, we have Callum Todd and David Haynes. Callum is the General Manager, Digital Strategy for Health Employees Superfund, and David Haynes, Executive Manager, Policy and Research for the Australian Institute of Superannuation Trustees. That's a rather long name. Welcome to New York, guys.
Thanks, Brett.
So what brings you to New York?
Well, we're here with a group of our colleagues, actually, as organised by the AIST, or Australian Institute of Super Trustees, to come across and speak to pension companies and 401k companies and look at what they're up to and come and visit the likes of Moovin and see where things are headed for our members and, you know, I guess following the trends here in the US.
So for those who aren't familiar with super, or superannuation, what how does it compare with pension funds here in the US? So why did we call it superannuation? Okay, sorry. We just got a contact from the engineer. We're not getting your volume from you guys for some reason. So my apologies from that. Listen, guys, we're just going to take a quick break and try and sort out our audio issues. And we'll be back in a moment.
It's been probably the best thing we've ever done, without a doubt.
In 2011, Duane Blomstrom and Maniga headed to the first Finovate in Europe.
We were a very small company back then, 6 people. We had decided that we were going to actually demo, which was a big step for a small company at that time.
After winning Best of Show, they grew to be a European market leader in personal financial management.
Pipeline essentially exploded as a result of this. It essentially put us on the map.
So why do they keep going back to Finovate?
It keeps us honest innovation-wise.
Register today for Finovate Spring 2015 in San Jose on May 12th and 13th and experience future fintech first.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
So, banks have a nice little exchange rate going on between themselves, but another, bigger exchange rate for you when you want to send money home or overseas. And they'll throw in some bank charges too, just for good measure. Not really fair, is it? But what if you could set your own exchange rate? That would be currency fair. CurrencyFair.com is a unique peer-to-peer marketplace that means you get a better rate and get to bypass those bank charges. You can't say fairer than that. CurrencyFair.com, the smarter way to send money home or abroad.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Move In is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Move In today.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. Sorry about the audio problems before the break. We have a special guest coming up for you right now. At this point in the show, we'd like to welcome Peter Diamandis. Now, some of you may know Peter. He's a scientist who created the XPRIZE. Remember Spaceship One? So Peter was responsible for that. He's obviously very interested in innovations in spaceflight. He's invested in companies, or he's founded ventures actually involved in asteroid mining right now. He's also involved in ventures in genomics, cell therapy, other things. But most recently, he wrote a book, Bold, How to Go Big, Create Wealth, and Impact the World. So I want to talk about that in a moment. But before that, Peter, first of all, welcome to Breaking Banks.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. We have an event coming up in New York, Exponential Finance, in June. And the dates for that is the... I'm just checking now. It's the 2nd and 3rd of June. And I want you to, you know, you've been involved in, obviously, the foundation of Singularity University with Ray Kurzweil. The event is sponsored by Singularity University and CNBC. So tell us a little bit about that event that's coming up in June.
Sure. It's called Exponential Finance, and it's a realization that in the finance world, on Wall Street, technology is playing a bigger and bigger role at a rate that is growing exponentially. It's the notion that the application of artificial intelligence, of blockchain, of the transformation of companies with robotics and sensors and Internet of Everything, and all of these technologies are going to change companies at an extraordinary rate. We're going to see 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies will not exist in 10 years. The rate at which we're going from I've got an idea to run a billion-dollar company, whether it's Instagram, Airbnb, Uber, WhatsApp, is growing extraordinarily. And I think today's financial advisors, today's investors, today's Wall Street companies don't really understand technology, exponential technologies, enough to realize the transformation they're going to be seeing. And this is a conference that... we bring the top thinkers and technologists in the world with a focus on the application of the financial world and exponential tech. The website, for those interested, is xfin.co, xfin.co.
Great. And tell us about some of the people you're interested in hearing from at the event, because I know there's some stellar speakers coming.
Yeah, well, I will, you know, the the names, all the details are on the website. So
you, for those of you that are interested in this, you know, Max Levchin, obviously previously from PayPal, Max is going to be at the show. Ray Kurzweil, who's obviously, you know, one of the founders with Peter of Singularity University, is going to be there. There's a great lineup, really, really stellar lineup. Peter, I want to come back to this point you made about finance, and particularly in the banking sector and the skill sets. You talked, you alluded to the requirements in this, but I found it very interesting in your book, Bold. You talked about the significant difference between the leaders of corporate America, you know, and the biggest companies in the world today, versus those who are coming up today, the sorts of, you know, entrepreneurs we've seen that have grown through this recent surge in technology, the likes of you talk about Instagram and others. What makes a good entrepreneur ready to take advantage of these seismic shifts in technology and the way it's applied in our lives?
Well, the challenge is that all of us are linear thinkers. We're wired that way. We evolve that way. You know, we do really great job at looking and predicting where things are going to be in 1 or 2 years. But the realization that the world isn't changing in a linear fashion. It's not, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's changing in an exponential fashion, you know, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. Doublings. And 10 doublings, you're 1,000 times better. And 20 doublings, you're 1,000,000 times. And 30 doublings, you're 1,000,000,000 times. And it's just not really easy for us to grasp. So, you know, Kodak as a company in 1996 was a $140,000 employees, $28 billion company. And what most people don't realize is that 20 years earlier, Kodak had invented the digital camera. They had invented
it. Oh, that was an amazing piece of insight.
Yeah, and the, you know, Kodak camera early on, because the growth seemed so deceptively slow. It went, you know, from 0.01 megapixels to 0.02 to 0.04 to 0.08, and it looked like it was all zero. The challenge is that, you know, this doubling eventually caught up to the point where it disrupted Kodak, and Kodak went bankrupt in 2012. And in that same year, another company called Instagram, also in the imagery business, you know, was acquired by Facebook for $1 billion, but they had 13 employees. And I call that sort of the new Kodak moment, when a linear thinking company is displaced by exponential technologies. And we're going to see this over and over again. So it's really helping investors and CEOs understand where exponential tech, and we see that as the technologies riding on top of growing computational power, sensors, networks, AI, robotics, 3D printing, synthetic biology, all of these fields are exploding onto the scene. And unless you're really utilizing these, unless you're digitizing your industry and you're dematerializing and demonetizing, and I'll be talking about this at the Exponential Finance Conference, you're missing the boat. And the norm right now is that the only constant is change. The rate of change is increasing. And you either disrupt yourself as a company or someone else will.
I like in the book, you talk about this incredible, I mean, the great example of Kodak. You talk also about this exponential curve occurring in many different places. You show one of those in respect to how many photos are taken each year, showing that in 2000, we had taken about 86 billion photos. And by 2011, that was up at 380 billion. And you credit that largely to, of course, the use of cameras in phones. And you have this amazing chart. I've got it on page 12 of the book, but I'm reading it on my Kindle. So it says $900,000 worth of applications, different technologies that are now combined in a smartphone. And the other stat you use, which is a great one, which was a Chinese national living in Mongolia has on their smartphone today more technology than a supercomputer in the 1970s. Let me ask you about this. As we've seen recently, the World Bank has announced some stats where we've seen the fastest banking of unbanked on a mobile phone. in the last 3-4 years, with 700 million people coming into the banking system. We've never seen anything like that before. What do you think the mobile phone will do to the way we think about money and the way we think about banking?
Well, I think it's the mobile phone. I think it's things like Apple Pay. We're going to head towards a time when cash is going to become a quaint idea. And it's it really will become all digital. I think I'm a big believer in blockchain and its derivatives like Bitcoin. And we'll be talking about that at Exponential Finance, that a lot of the middlemen in today's world, whether it's a real estate broker or a financial transactor or whatever the case might be, are going to be disintermediated by AI. I guess that translation is like lose your job, be replaced by. And the question is, you know, are you thinking ahead of the curve of where you want to be going? I think we're going to see one of the most impactful changes. Again, we'll talk about exponential finance, is the notion that today, well, in 2010, we had 1.8 billion people connected online.
Right.
Out of a population of 7.5 billion today. Right now, it went from 1.8 billion to about 2.8 billion in 2015. By 2020, 5 years from now, the number of people connected on planet Earth is likely to exceed 5 billion. It could be the entire planet. It could be 8 billion people. We see companies like Facebook, Google, SpaceX, Qualcomm, Virgin, all planning global satellite and atmospheric satellite constellations to provide a megabit connection to everybody. So what this means is that on planet Earth, we are going from 2.8 billion to potentially, you know, 8 billion, 5 billion new minds are coming online. These are 5 billion people who have never bought anything, have never uploaded anything, have never done financial transactions. In the next 5 years, we're going to see the global market almost triple. And this is extraordinary. This represents tens of trillions of dollars flowing through the global economy. We're going to have more people banked digitally and doing transactions digitally than ever before. And it's just a massive shift in the global economy, and people aren't talking about this. So we'll be talking about this. We'll be giving you an insight about this isn't a matter of if. It's just a matter of is it in 2020, 2022. This is a transformation in the global economy that's heading our way, and people should be thinking about how do I take advantage of it.
Excellent. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Peter Diamandis, the author of Bold, How to Go Big, Create Wealth, and Impact the World. Peter will be speaking at Exponential Finance June 2nd, 3rd in New York, and we're talking to him about some of these changes and how it will impact the finance sector and the banking industry. Peter, coming back to one of the central themes of your book that you did with Stephen Kotler, you said that the biggest opportunities often are where the biggest problems are. What are the problems that get you excited in respect to where there are some opportunities that technology is going to give us an opportunity to shift, move the needle on this stuff?
So, you know, my constant refrain to the entrepreneurs, I advise about 250 CEOs every over the course of the year through my Abundance 360 program that I run every January in Beverly Hills, and I advise about 30 startups. And the constant refrain that I have is that the world's biggest problems are the world's biggest business opportunities. And it's really an extraordinary alignment. The notion being that if you want to look at the global challenges in water, food, energy, healthcare, learning, these are the places that have tremendous upside, and where one can really create extraordinary wealth while creating a better world. I also say, you know, you want to become a billionaire, help a billion people. So what is an area that you want to do? I'll give an example. This Exponential Finance Conference is being hosted by Singularity University. As you mentioned, I'm the co-founder, I'm the executive chairman, along with Ray Kurzweil, who's the chancellor. And we have about 8,000 applications every summer for our graduate program, which takes 80 spots. All 80 spots are scholarship. Google provides the scholarships for these amazing people. And the grad students come to our program, and over the course of the summer, they study all the exponentially growing tech, you know, computers, network sensors, AI, robotics, digital manufacturing, synthetic biology, all these fields. And we ask them to start a company, a product, or service that has the ability to impact the lives of a billion people inside of 10 years. We call this 10 to the 9th plus impact. And that's extraordinary that today an entrepreneur can start something that can touch the lives of a billion people. And that's what we think about.
Who had that quote that they said, if you want a billion-dollar company, build a company where a billion people will pay you a dollar for your service. I can't remember it, but that's sort of part of what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I don't know. I have my own version of that. I don't know who might have said the first, but it really, and that's the situation, right? Today, there'll be a billion handsets in Africa, digital mobile handsets in 2016. We have more handsets than people are on the planet. So it used to be that if you wanted to touch the lives of a billion people, you had to be Muhtar Kent, the chairman of Coca-Cola, or Jeff Immelt, the chairman of GE. Today, you can be a kid in a garage with a great idea and a great application. And that's why the world is different, and that's why the rules for finance just are changing and changing rapidly.
You'll love this one, Peter. We had Standard Bank on the show a few months ago. And the Zueli, who's looking after their movement into other countries outside of or on the African continent, so outside of South Africa, where Standard Bank's home base is, they said they did research into banking the unbanked in Africa or across the continent. And they worked out that about 70-75% of the people who currently don't have a bank account, to get them physically to a branch, they would either have to spend more than their entire life savings or more than a month's salary.
Amazing.
So, you know, their conclusion was the same as ours, which is the only way to bank these people is on a phone. You can't do it in physical branches. So we've got about a minute before the break. So what I'd like to talk to you about after the break is your thought on sensors and some of how this is going to change the world. What are you specifically going to be talking about at Exponential Finance for those who are thinking about coming to the event?
I'm going to be providing sort of the overview that I do for all the top CEOs. I probably speak to the top 100 companies in the world on a regular basis. And it's a look at how all these technologies are moving, what's in the lab now, coming to market in the next 2 to 5, 10 years. What I call the 6 Ds, I write about this in bold, the notion that whatever becomes digitized enters a period of deceptive growth and becomes disruptive, and then it dematerializes, demonetizes, and democratizes industries and technologies. And the notion that companies can't sit still. You've got to be disrupting yourself or someone else will.
Absolutely. So check out Amazon.com for Bold by Peter Diamandis. We'll be right back with Peter after this brief break and a word from our sponsors.
Time. There's never enough. You just don't have the time to search out all the latest banking innovations from around the world. But the good news is, we've already done it for you at Banking Reports. 700 hours of research goes into each edition of our Global Banking Innovation Monitor. Be smarter and get one step ahead. Get Banking Reports sent quarterly to your inbox. To subscribe, follow us on Twitter at banking_reports.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest, and charge a statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Banks. Who needs them? Okay, we all do. But if you're sending money overseas, you could do without the rip-off exchange rates and bonkers bank charges. That's where Currency Fair comes in. CurrencyFair.com lets you exchange currency direct and transfer funds to bank accounts worldwide. So you get a fair exchange rate and get away from paying those crazy bank charges. How good does that sound? I know, really good. Find out more at CurrencyFair.com, the smarter way to send money home or abroad.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. We were talking with Peter Diamandis about the Exponential Finance Conference coming up June 2nd and 3rd in New York City, sponsored by Singularity University and CNBC. Peter, before the show, before the break, we were talking about the impact of this technology on the financial services space and the theme of the conference. But I'd like to delve into one of the aspects of BOLD, particularly that interested me, which is how sensors are going to change the way we live. Would you like to sort of expand a little bit on your view of why these remote sensor networks and the ability to capture this information and feed it into AI and algorithms is going to be such an impactful change?
Yeah, sure. It's first of all, it's a realization that today, if you are not a data-driven company, you will not survive. Just that blunt about it. All the companies that are crushing it, from Google to Facebook to Uber and Airbnb are all data-driven companies. They don't depend on human intuition. They don't depend on humans collecting the data. These are companies that are collecting massive amounts of data autonomously, then using what are called machine learning algorithms. These are effectively artificial intelligence, looking at the data and making decisions on pricing, on availability, on distributing resources. So here's a way to think about this. We're living in a world today, according to my friends at Cisco, that have about 12 to 14 billion connected devices. Your cell phone, your TV, your car, whatever it might be that's connected on the internet. That number is likely to go from 14 billion devices today to about 50 to 100 billion devices by 2020.
And so, these are not all smartphones, of course.
These are your watch, your phone, your light bulb, a lot of things are becoming connected to the internet. In other words, they have an IP address and they're IP addressable. GE's jet engines are IP connected devices. So when GE puts a jet engine on an airplane, that jet engine has got hundreds of sensors on it and are constantly transmitting what's going on inside that jet engine. And GE is monitoring it on a Virgin Atlantic flight, whatever it is, from the ground to make sure it's working perfectly so that in advance of anything happening to the jet engine, they know and they have the repair crews there when you land to delay it. So it's just extraordinary. We're going to see this over and over again. It's preventative and predictive rather than reactive after the fact. And you as a human are going to be monitored to a great degree. We just are beginning with a Fitbit or a Samsung or Apple Watch or that sort of thing. But that's just beginning. 5 years from now, it's going to be much more. Now, these 50 to 100 billion connected devices now have on them you know, half a dozen to a dozen sensors. And we're heading towards a world with a trillion sensors, a trillion sensor economy, where you're going to be able to know anything you want, anytime you want. And the sensors come in lots of different sizes and shapes. Your cell phone has a microphone, has a magnetometer, has a GPS, has cameras, has all kinds of things sensing its environment and taking in data. We also have constellations of satellites over the Earth, you know, fleets of drones, whatever Google Glass becomes, autonomous cars. All of these are gathering data. So I believe we're heading towards a world of this trillion sensor economy where you're going to be able to ask any question you want and be able to find the data to answer it. You want to know how many green Izod shirts are on the corner of 5th and Madison? You can ask that question and know it. You want to know, you know, what Best Buy's Christmas sales are going to be on, you know, December 25th. You can know that rather than waiting for their January sales reports, because you can be using satellite networks or drones to count cars in Best Buy's parking lots, or look at the size of the packages people are carrying out of the store, and do some estimating. I mean, it's crazy,
incredible yeah. explosion of data.
Yeah.
So, just sort of finishing up this theme, because I know we have to let you go, but and sort of getting back to the conference. One of the really interesting things, you know, Ray Kurzweil's quoted in your book talking about how we will give permission to an AI to listen to every phone conversation we have, read our emails, blogs, eavesdrop on our meetings, and so forth. But part of this is not just the collection of data, but it's the synthesis and giving this advice back. Now, the financial services industry has long maintained that a human is superior than a digital experience because a human can give you advice. But you really challenge that concept in your book, Bold, don't you?
Well, a human can give you advice based upon the knowledge we have in our brain or our ability to go online and Google and ask the right question. An AI is able to hold a million times as much information in its brain than we humans can. And so one of the best examples there is IBM has a supercomputer called Watson, an artificial intelligence that they to demonstrate how impressive Watson was, they downloaded Wikipedia into its memory banks, and they challenged the all-two-time Jeopardy champions. The guy had won the most money and the guy had won the most games. And Watson ended up, you know, really crushing the human opponents.
Yeah, we had the IBM Watson team on the show not long ago. Fascinating
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, Mike Roden, who runs the program, is a great guy, and it's extraordinary what they're able to do, but they're taking Watson in a multitude of different directions, including medicine, including finance, including, you know, food and wine, fashion, and it's extraordinary from that standpoint of an AI is really got an extraordinary advantage in its ability to process information. Now, I want to say I do believe our future is one where humans are partnering with AIs, where we're going to see AI and human collaboration. And that's what I'm betting on in the short term. In fact, we're working on an XPRIZE along with the TED organization on an AI-human collaboration competition.
That's so interesting. That's yeah. really interesting. Well, you know, please, when that happens, let us know, because we'd love to talk about that.
Yes, a pleasure.
Great. So, all right. So, if you're interested in hearing more about this, obviously we could talk about this for hours, but you know, Peter has limited time today. Peter, thank you for joining us. Just give us the dates again for Exponential Finance.
Sure. It's June 2nd and 3rd. It's a Tuesday and Wednesday in Manhattan, in New York. The website is xfin.co, xfin.co, and I think what you'll see is if you make your money in the financial world, if you're a financial advisor, if you're a CEO, this is a high-level financial conference where we're going to unveil to you the impact that exponential technologies have on your industry.
Yeah, and for those of you that follow us on Twitter, check out XFinance as the Twitter name, and Peter Diamandis, of course, his Twitter name is Peter Diamandis, and follow this theme as we go live on this event in June 2nd, 3rd. Peter Diamandis, author of Bold, thank you for joining us on Breaking Banks today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Great. So now back to our visitors in the studio here in New York. We have the team from the Australian... I've got to get this right again. My memory's
Australian
terrible.
Institute of Super Trustees.
Australian Institute of Super Trustees. So before we had some problems technically in the first break, we were talking about the definition of superannuation. So let's try that again.
Okay. Thanks, Brett. Australia was settled by Europeans as a convict colony, and they brought with them a lot of British soldiers. And when they were cashiered out of the British Army, they were called they were superannuated. And that term became superannuation and is now the term that we use in Australia for pension funds. But we've gone a long way since 1788.
And tell me, we got this clear beforehand. Superannuation is essentially the same thing as pension funds here in the US or in the UK.
That's right. And it's Australian superannuation funds have got a really big financial footprint. We punch way above our weight. It's over $2 trillion in the superannuation sector at the moment.
Well, that was going to be my next question, right? How much money is managed by the Australian super industry?
Yeah, we're the fourth largest money market in the world, which is pretty impressive for a country of only 25 million people.
And who drink beer and play cricket.
You betcha.
Now, why is that? Why is there... Because I thought there were only two asset classes in Australia, property and stock market.
No, we're fortunate to have had a mandatory superannuation system for the last 20 years. So we've grown from pretty much nothing to $2 trillion over that time. And that also means that the size of the market is likely to reach something like $8 trillion in the next 20 years. And with that comes an enormous hunger for innovation.
Absolutely. So, Callum, maybe let's talk about the health sector, because you look after employees in that from a super perspective. What did you think about what Peter Diamandis was saying about disruption of healthcare and the advisory space with AI?
Yeah, quite incredible. It's something that we see will change a lot. And the thing about our members is that they're looking after sick people, and there's an element to, the AI can inform this, but we really need people to look after sick and aging Australians, and that's very much where, as Hester, the fund for those that work in that sector is really about making sure that those workers who don't necessarily choose their careers for the financial rewards are looked after in their retirement and can have a retirement that they aspire to. Now, it might not be sailing on a yacht, but it could just mean them buying the brands that they want to buy and being able to give the grandkids some Christmas presents.
Yeah. How is mobile and these technologies we've been talking about affecting your industry right now?
Particularly for us, we have a lot of workers who aren't at desks, so we've got hundreds of thousands of those members who have provided their email to us. We send out a campaign, and we'll get sometimes...
The young blokes call it inboxing.
Yeah, well, there you go, inboxing, hey?
We don't call it email anymore.
So, yeah, we inbox, and we get about 70% of those members opening on mobile phones.
David?
Well, one of the consequences of having a compulsory system is that you can't assume that people are actually interested or engaged. And so rather than just providing them with physical services, you've got to provide them with mass market services. And tech is an enabler for that, and mobilisation is the best way to reach the bulk of superannuation members.
Now, here in the US, one of the problems we have is we've got a very distributed load of banks and institutions, and so the quality of technology commitment varies markedly. 70% of financial institutions in the US don't even own their own core technology. What's it like in the super space?
Well, Australia has a very concentrated banking market, but we've also got an increasingly concentrated superannuation market. And superannuation operates within a very competitive space, so that there's a lot of competition for members, which means that there's a lot of competition to innovate. And I guess it's been one of the drivers of us coming out to the States, because it seems as if a lot of the big innovations are actually happening on the West and East Coast.
So here's a question I have to ask you. Where do you think Australia is more advanced than the US right now in this space?
When we visit...
Don't be shy.
When we visit, I think we drink our own Kool-Aid in Australia. I think we're very bullish about the growth prospects, and that means...
There has been some... Like you had Kaching and ANZ Go money. There has been some pretty advanced stuff, some early mover stuff. What do you think, Callum?
Yeah, look, I think we're, particularly in the superannuation or the pension space, as we've visited other funds in America, we can feel confident that we're, in some respects, playing, at the same level or, in fact, better. And the way that we're thinking about, for us, we delivered a mobile responsive website, a couple of years ago, and we thought that was something, we weren't necessarily early to market with that, and yet when we get here, we're finding that some of the companies we're talking to are still to launch a mobile responsive site.
So listen, guys, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have an extended interview for our listeners with you guys so we can get into a bit more detail because we are running out of time. Next couple of weeks, we're going to have Chris Skinner do a guest host slot for us, so watch out for that one. For those of you who want to follow this conversation online, don't forget breakingbanks.com. It's where you'll be able to find the extended interview from today's session with David Haynes from the Australian Institute of Superannuation Trustees and Callum Todd, the General Manager for Digital Strategy at the Health Employees Super Fund out of Australia from Melbourne, my old hometown. Thanks for joining us again today, guys.
Cheers. Thank you, Brett.
That's it for Breaking Banks. We'll see you guys next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.